Well, as Eric noted when we started this morning, we are making our way through the Gospel of Luke throughout this winter and into spring. And so last Sunday, we were in chapter 4, where we heard Luke's inaugural address, if you will, as he began his public ministry. And he's been pretty busy since then. He's been going around from his hometown in Nazareth, around various other regions. He's been to Capernaum, where he cast out a demon in the synagogue, and he did a bunch of healing there. And he's been attracting crowds as he's teaching with authority, we are told. But so far, all of those things that Jesus has been doing, he has been doing pretty much on his own. When he faced temptation in the desert by himself, he stood before the synagogue in his hometown as a single, solitary figure. He's alone throughout his healing ministry at Capernaum. But as we come to today's text, then that begins to change, as Jesus begins to gather this group around him. As our story opens, Jesus again is teaching. His popularity has grown already, so he has this big crowd that's pressing on him. And today they're gathered on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, or Luke refers to it by its Greek name, the Lake Gennesaret. And trying to escape from the pressures of the crowd that are pressing on him, and maybe to get a little bit better spot where he can be heard, he asks to be taken out a little bit onto the ocean or onto the lake. The boat that he steps into is a boat that belongs to a fisherman named Simon. Now we should note here, this is not the first time we encounter Simon in the Gospel of Luke. When Jesus was in Capernaum, he actually, we are told, goes to Simon's house where he heals Simon's mother-in-law. Now, Matthew and Mark report these same stories, but in reverse order. So depending on who you take as the one who has them in chronological order, Jesus may not have been a total stranger when he encountered Simon here at the lake. And in any case, Simon agrees to his request. He lets Jesus into his boat, and Jesus is teaching from there. But we don't know what he says. That's not recorded. So no, what Jesus teaches that day. What we are told is when he finishes speaking, he turns to Simon, and he asks him to row further out into the lake and to cast his net one more time. Simon explains, well, he's already been there all night. Didn't catch a single fish, but he reluctantly agrees to give it one more try. And so Simon rows out again and casts out his nets. And then we're told that when they try to bring those nets back into the boat, their catch was so huge that their nets were splitting. So they signaled for their partners in another boat to come and help them, and both boats fill, and they're about to sink. This is an incredible experience that they have. They're all astonished. I mean, there's no way they could possibly have caught all of these fish in one single casting of the net, especially after having such a horrible time the night before. And so Simon, who now is referred to as Peter for the first time in Luke's gospel, turns to Jesus, and he's overcome as he declares, "Leave me, Lord, for I am a sinner." Simon's convinced that he is not worthy even to be in the presence, in the same boat with somebody like this man before him. But Jesus does not go away from these fishermen, of course. Instead, he does just the opposite. He invites them to come with him. He says to Simon simply, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people." And with that, Simon and the rest of the fishermen leave behind their nets, their boats, everything they know, and they follow after Jesus. It is a remarkable story. It's a story with many layers of meaning. And as we seek to follow the call of Jesus ourselves today, I would note at least three significant themes that I find in this story that are helpful for us as we answer the call. And the first thing I note is that these people whom Jesus calls seem to be rather unlikely candidates. I mean, the typical pattern in Jesus' day is if somebody wanted to become a follower of a rabbi, they would go to the rabbi and they would ask permission to become a disciple, sort of the way one might apply for a job today. But these fishermen don't seem to have indicated any interest in becoming disciples. Jesus comes along. He asks them to take this job that they have not applied for and for which, frankly, they don't seem terribly qualified. I mean, these are just fishermen. And they're fishermen in Galilee. Galilee is, well, it's the sort of place that the folks up in Jerusalem are pretty suspicious of, because this is the area where the Jews and the Gentiles live very close to one another, and there's contact between them, contact that just might make the Jewish people unclean. And that's especially true for those who are engaged in manual labor, dirty physical labor like these fishermen. Now it's interesting, if we read on in the chapter, Jesus issues another call to another disciple. This one is a man named Levi. Levi is a tax collector. He works for the occupying Roman authorities that most of the Jewish people hate. These are not the sort of people that one would expect. If Jesus had a marketing consultant, they would never advise that he would start... It would create his startup with folks like this. Because when Jesus starts his ministry, he doesn't look to the rich and the powerful for support. He doesn't turn to those whom society considers the best and the brightest. This isn't like a president trying to make a cabinet. Jesus doesn't turn to the tech billionaires and the media stars and the influential government officials of his day to fill the posts. He calls common laborers, low-level bureaucrats, and those who are distant from the halls of power, both geographically and socially. I don't know why Jesus chooses these people, frankly. And sometimes I wonder if Jesus himself may have had second thoughts from time to time about these choices. But Simon Peter and his associates stand in this long line of biblical characters, from Moses to Ruth to Jonah to Mary. People who appear to be unlikely choices to carry on God's work. But as it has so often been said, God does not call the qualified. God qualifies those who are called. A second key theme that I find in this text is that Jesus is forming a community. His ministry here is entering a new phase. From this point on, Jesus is no longer that isolated voice declaring God's kingdom in word and deed. He is becoming now the leader of a movement dedicated to living out the principles of God's kingdom here on earth. Now he does make personal invitations to Simon, to the sons of Zebedee, later on to Levi. But while this is a call that goes to individuals, and those individuals have to make a personal choice, it is not a call that is individualistic in nature. It is a call to become a part of the Jesus movement, to join in a community of believers who are committed to the work of the kingdom. So when Jesus calls Simon in our text today, he doesn't say to him, well, come and you'll experience personal fulfillment. Or come and develop a heightened sense of self-awareness. He says simply, from now on, you will be fishing for people. Now, I'm not suggesting that Jesus doesn't care about self-esteem, personal empowerment, but these are not his ultimate goals. Yes, the disciples will discover a greater sense of themselves. Yes, they will find empowerment in ways that they had never dreamed of, but those are not the ends to which they are being called. They are instead part of a larger mission, the mission of the kingdom, a mission that is focused not ultimately on oneself, but upon others. And we are still called to respond, not just as individuals, but as a community, as a body of believers. Our denomination, Mennonite Church USA, has a vision statement, and it's notable in that it begins not with "God calls me." Rather, it says God calls us to be followers of Jesus Christ, and by the power of the Holy Spirit to grow as communities of grace, joy, and peace, so that God's healing and hope flow through us to the world. Finally, then, I would note also that this call that Jesus issues to the fishermen is a call that entails a fair amount of risk, but also great reward. The first thing that Jesus tells Simon to do is to head out to the deep water. This is an area of mystery in the middle of this murky lake. Even an experienced fisherman like Simon Peter would have no idea what's really going down all the way under the surface there, where it can get up to 140 feet deep. The deep is the realm of wonder. The deep represents the unknown, and so Jesus challenges Simon and his companions to move out there beyond their comfort zones, beyond the known world, to explore the deep. And it is in the domain of the deep that they catch this whole mass of fish. And perhaps it is Simon's response to this incredible reward that convinces Jesus that he is the right one to call as a disciple. And I don't know, if Simon Peter had been a modern North American, his reaction probably would have been something more like, "Oh, wow, that's cool, let's do it again." He would have tried to figure out how he could replicate this phenomenal feat. He would have wanted to start calculating his potential profits from this huge catch. He might have created a business plan that he pitches to Jesus, outlining precisely how they can develop a partnership, they jointly leveraging their assets and creating synergistic strategies to optimally facilitate growth or something like that. That's not what he does. Instead, Simon falls to his knees. And he says, "Leave me, Lord, for I am a sinner." Instead of trying to control his environment, he confesses his unworthiness to try and take advantage of it. Instead of manipulating circumstances for his own benefit, he marvels at what he has just experienced. Instead of analyzing the situation to see what he can get out of it, he is awestruck at the incredible power and beauty of creation itself. That indeed is a proper reaction to the recognition of the miraculous presence of God around him. And I think it's because of Simon's response then that Jesus says to him, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people." In other words, if you think this is amazing, you ain't seen nothing yet. I've got much bigger fish to fry than these, and I want you to be part of it. That call that comes to those fishermen in Galilee nearly 2,000 years ago, it continues to come to us today. We may not be any more qualified than Simon Peter to be disciples of Christ, but Jesus invites us to bring whatever we have and whoever we are to the task of following him. And as we answer that call, we find ourselves among equally qualified and equally unqualified persons within the community of faith. We may find ourselves in the company of many of those whom we would not have chosen to be a part of this. But as our companions, we are entrusted together with the often messy work of being the church, of building up the kingdom. And together then, we are challenged to move beyond our comfort zones, to take risks, to explore new possibilities. And in that common work, we are invited to respond with wonder rather than trying to calculate potential benefits. to live in gratitude for what we are receiving rather than in constantly striving for more and more for ourselves. Jesus called Simon and James and John, and Jesus calls you and me. We are invited to answer that call, a call to community, a call to take risks, and a call to live in wonder.